Well, just as everybody's worried about the economic recovery and whether it's got legs and whether it's got some more stamina in it, the NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, comes out with its optimism survey, and that index is almost at the highest level in history, and its history goes back to 1983. The man who delivered those happy numbers is their chief economist, William Dunkelberg, who joins us right now. Dr. Dunkelberg, it's good to have you.
Thank you, sir. Always a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. So this, it looks like at least small businesses has found some optimism out there. This is a remarkable number.
Absolutely. You know, it's and it's really a very good sign. Remember that the small business produces about half of the private sector GDP and employs over half of the private workforce. So if they're in tune and they're moving forward, why, the economy kind of gets pushed along, even if the big brothers and sisters are not as interested in going along, which I think they are these days. This economy is really hot. So the optimism index is 1/10 of a point short of the record set in 1983 under Reagan at the beginning of that expansion that went to 1991. It's great news for the economy.
Well, the most recent concern we hear about are, you know, tariffs and a trade war. But I guess small business is pretty well right under the radar in this. They aren't doing a lot of importing and exporting.
Well, that's right. Directly, we don't do very much of that. That would be mostly a manufacturing firm or some other ones. And some of our firms, our manufacturing firms, are in the supply chains of the bigger firms that are engaged in trade. But we're primarily we primarily dominate the service sector, and so there's not going to be much impact there directly. I mean, ultimately, when all of this stuff starts changing relative prices of things, then we might notice. And we sell a lot of imports that come in, so our retailers will notice that things get more expensive or cheaper depending on what's going on. So we'll see indirect impacts, but probably not very much straight on.
The other concern that everybody seems to have is labor. I mean, looking for skilled labor has been a challenge, but also what we hear is they have to hire, you know, interview 10 people to find one that'll pass a drug test so they can hire them.
Yeah, well, that's true in some segments of the workforce. I have, you know, my landscaper complained that out of 25 people applying for a job, he posted at $15 an hour. 20 of them left when he said you have to pass a drug test. So that is a problem, unfortunate one. But mostly it's just the competition for these people so that the firms can produce more. They've got customers, there's demand, they want to produce more output, which of course would be more GDP. But they do need a worker to help get it done, and they're trying to find them. So not cooperating like we'd like to see, of course, is the labor force participation, the supply of workers. If that would cooperate a little more, then it would be easier to fill a position instead of stealing one from your competitor.
What about the border policy? I mean, the fact that we seem to be inhibiting, you know, workers coming in from other countries. Is that a concern of theirs?
Well, that certainly impacts labor supply. There are a number of issues there. One is at the low end, you know, the people to pick the crops, for example, whether they can get in or not. And then at the high end, there are a lot of our high-tech firms that want to hire foreigners that are well-trained with their PhDs in math and science and so on. And so all that policy does matter, but it's not going to make a major shift in the available supply. We really still have to supply most of our workers domestically. That's from our population of 350 million people.
As an economist, do you look at a number like this, which is virtually at an historic high, and you have to ask yourself, is that as good as it gets? Have we peaked?
Well, it could get better if the demand keeps going up. Now, if we can't get the workers, though, to produce the output, you know, really all we're going to get is that thing that the Fed wanted, inflation. If we have people demanding new houses, for example, which is the case, and we can't find the workers to put a working group together to build the house, then we can't supply the output, and the price of the existing houses goes up, and that's a problem that we're having right now. So If we, you know, if we reach that point, we'll just start seeing inflation erode the purchasing power. Always trying to equalize demand and supply, of course.
But again, overall, when we look at the national figures, we know certainly there are pockets of inflation, but we just haven't seen much wage inflation at all, which is odd considering this problem of finding workers has been around for a while.
That's right. It has been around for a while, and our firms are raising compensation at record rates, so we know it's happening out there. It'll take a while for it to show up in the government stats. A couple of Wall Street studies show that there's a three-quarter to a one-year lag between the time our guys and gals say they're going to raise worker comp and the time it actually shows up in the government statistics like the Employment Cost Index. So, you know, it's out there and it's working its way through the system. We're going to see it. So far, we're not seeing a lot of price hikes in response to this, but part of this is because those wage hikes are being funded by higher profits, the ability to raise prices a little bit, lower regulatory costs, et cetera, the tax cut. All of those things make it possible for our firms to pay the higher comp without really having to raise prices to pass it on yet.
You know, the other screwy thing is every month when we look at the national figures coming out, the average hourly work week, it seems to be stuck at 34.5 hours. I would guess in the case of a lot of your small businesses, these guys are working 50 hours a week.
Yeah, and of course, lots of those workers want to work those extra hours, so they're happy to get them, especially if they get overtime. They're happy about that. So we have a very flexible workforce, and that's good. We like to have the government keep its hands off and not try to regulate it and tell us how many hours and how many days off we have to provide and how many days in a row you can work or not work, all that kind of nonsense. Flexibility is good. The freedom to choose is great, and we can produce more output that way.
And the numbers look great, too. Dr. William Dunkelberg is chief economist for the National Federation of Independent Business. Thank you very much for the time, sir.
My pleasure.
Thanks. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.